I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Washington State has already created a massive drug crisis, so why not find more ways to profit off of it? Plus, the state teachers union hosts a training webinar to help staff members obstruct ICE and prepare for even more statewide reparations. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Holy smokes, we got some insane stuff to talk about on the show today. It's going to drive you nuts. You're going to start looking at real estate in Florida and Idaho and Montana and Texas and other free places that aren't insane. However, before we get there, I just want to recenter you on why we even bother. Some days I'm like, why do we even bother? Because it does matter. Having people who are willing, like yourselves, to think and independently, to think critically, to be involved, to make your voices heard, it does matter. We can't change everything overnight. There are little things here and there that we can bring attention to and we can make a difference. And I do think here in the coming days, we are going to see the situation around the pediatric interim care center for drug addicted babies. I think that we're going to see a fix there, or at least a temporary improvement. It's a story we've been covering for the last week. This inexplicable decision by Bob Ferguson to veto funding for a facility in Kent, Washington that cares for drug addicted babies. And as we've told you on the show, we had a guest on this on Sunday, Representative Michelle Caldier. The decision seemed to be totally political. It seemed to be an instance of putting radical ideology ahead of literally the lives of little helpless babies. And so there's been this pushback that was predominantly coming from the right. You know, we heard from State Representative Travis Couture, a Republican. I said Michelle Caldier, a Republican as well. But we've been raising holy hell about it. The Seattle Times printed an op-ed from Representative Couture, because I think the thing that got me about this is, first of all, it makes no sense. But second, you know, here we are funding laser hair removal for transgender inmates, and you're telling me we don't have $100,000 to continue to fund a facility that takes care of drug-addicted babies in the middle of a drug crisis? And the governor's office, Democrats, no one would say, no one could give a concrete reason why you would pull the contract for that facility to operate. So we knew it was political, right? So I saw this post just a few minutes ago from State Representative Mari Levitt, a Democrat who's one of the sane Democrats in Olympia. Now, I need to reach out for clarification here, but I wanted to put it up because either way, I think it's a step forward. Now, Mari Levitt went and toured the Pediatric Interim Care Center with some of her Republican colleagues. Give her a lot of credit for doing that. And she posted this. She tagged Bob Ferguson, said, joining the calls to pause the decision to end the PIC contract and extend a year and spend the time with intention to assess the system need, options available, and how best to move forward. Nothing to lose and only babies to care for to survive and thrive. Now, I don't know if she's saying Bob Ferguson is joining the calls or she's telling Bob Ferguson she is joining the calls. But I think either way, it's significant because now you have Democrats who are adding their voices to this conversation to say, hey, we just need to hit the pause button and we need to reassess the situation. At the end of the day, if all we lose is like we dedicate $100,000 more to this facility for the time being, and then we decide in a year to close it anyway, what will the loss be there? We'll have saved more drug-addicted babies. Oh my gosh, you know, the horror. So we'll reach out and see, is that Bob Ferguson joining the calls or is she telling Bob Ferguson that she is? Either way, we know there's some support here from at least one sane Democrat to be able to have this facility continue to operate. So I do think the pressure matters. And pointing out some of these things, when they happen in darkness, because I'm telling you, good grief, some of the stories on the show today, I just want to shut myself in a closet and never speak to anyone again. But when these things happen and there's no one around to call them out, to push back, think of how much worse it would be. And I know it's bad, but think of how much worse it would be. And over time, if we can raise awareness for some of these things, push back so there can be a little sanitizing, you know, have the daylight hit it so people know what's going on, I think it only increases the chances that we can derail some of these efforts or at least reverse bad decisions. So with all of that said, this is absolutely nuts. We have a clear drug crisis in Washington State, one of the worst drug crises in the entire nation, and that is true for much of the West Coast because we have a lot of the same policies. It's not a coincidence. It's not an accident that the worst drug crisis as it pertains to fentanyl right now is up and down the West Coast. You have identical policies where we coddle drug abusers, where we allow people to use drugs out in the open, to overdose on our sidewalks, in our alleyways, in our business alcoves, and we totally have normalized it and de facto legalized it. Not a coincidence that it's just West Coast, and then you get the drug cartel trafficking. It's a straight shot up from Mexico. So we have a bad drug crisis. And as a result, as with any problem the government tries to fix, it creates an industrial complex. So we spend billions of dollars only to make the drug crisis worse. And they invest in things like harm reduction, where your tax money is spent putting these little kits together that help people inject the drugs that are going to kill them into their veins, which is absolutely asinine. It's not harm reduction, it's assisted suicide. And, you know, as with the homeless crisis, which really is a drug crisis, there's really no incentive for the government to fix it. And there's no incentive in that case for progressives to push to actually fix the drug crisis because it's their cronies and allies who are benefiting from the multi-million dollar contracts that the state pushes out on this. So you have this whole industrial complex. So when you're profiting so much off a crisis, you're not looking for ways to solve it. You're looking for ways to continue to profit off of it. And Washington State has found yet another way. Meet your new drug dealer. His name is Bob Ferguson. This from our friends at the Post-Millennial, broke by Ari Hoffman. Washington State considers supplying drugs directly to addicts in, quote, safe supply initiative. Let's be clear. There is no such thing as a safe supply of fentanyl. There is no such thing as a safe supply of heroin. Just like there's no such thing as a safe injection site or harm reduction when it comes to putting deadly drugs in your veins. So now Washington State figures, let's just cut out the middleman, you know? We're already letting people overdose and die on our streets. We're already enriching ourselves off of tax dollars, sending those out to our biggest donors and our allies so they can squander tens of millions of dollars a month, making the drug crisis worse. So let's continue to get more money coming in by cutting out the middleman, so to speak, the drug pushers on the street corner, and we'll just deal the drugs ourselves. In fact, we'll have government-funded bureaucrats inject the drugs right into the veins of drug users. Let's just make this process as simple as possible. Before you think I am engaged in hyperbole, I am not. This is Washington State, after all. So all of this is born out of a bill that was passed in 2021 that created a working group, because they love their working groups, where taxpayers have to fund studies in working groups to think about all these insane ideas that the Democratic majority has, even though the Democratic majority is going to act on them anyway. The working group is just a way to distance themselves. Wasn't our idea. The working group of experts came up with it, right? So in 2021, there was a bill passed, and as part of it, they had to create a working group to study safe supply options for drug users. So this is, I'm going to read you this verbatim because it's insane and I want you to understand where all this is coming from. Also interesting that it's being handled by the Washington State Healthcare Authority. In what world is drug abuse healthcare? They always say healthcare is a human right, so I guess they do think that fentanyl abuse is a human right. So it said the recommendation was to assemble a statewide work group to make recommendations on a framework for safe supply for inclusion in the Washington State Substance Use Recovery Services Plan to provide a regulated, tested supply of controlled substances to individuals at risk of drug overdoses. The work group should center people who use drugs with lived and living experience. That's interesting. So yeah, you can't have the dead drug users can't be part of it, obviously. And people who have lost loved ones. So that's sort of the framework. But listen to this too, because I just caught this before we came on today. This work group should consider the values of Alternative lawful income sources for people who have been trapped in the illicit distribution economy and could be displaced by a safe supply program to prevent potential unintended consequences that would disadvantage communities most impacted. All right, that's a lot of word soup. Let me read it again slowly because I want you to understand what they're talking about here before I tell you what they're talking about here. The work group should also look into alternative lawful income sources for people who have been trapped in the illicit distribution economy and could be displaced by a safe supply program to prevent potential unintended consequences that would disadvantage communities most impacted. They're talking about finding new jobs for drug dealers. They're talking about, as part of this, if we're going to take over the distribution, if we, the state of Washington, are going to become the drug pushers, well, we've got to worry about the unintended consequences. I mean, let's not mention all the very clear consequences that would result from that, but we're going to put drug pushers out of work. Homie on the corner won't have a job anymore. So we have to, and he's been trapped in the illicit economy because of the probably the color of his skin is what they're asserting here. So not only do we have to take over for the drug dealers, but then when we put them out of work, we've got to find a new job for the drug dealers to avoid potential unintended consequences that would disadvantage communities most impacted. You're telling me as a state government, putting a drug dealer out of work is an unintended consequence? So you're just saying it all out loud because you want drug dealers to still have a job. This is insane. Oh, it gets crazier. So that was the purpose of the bill passed in 2021. Create this working group. Let's look into safe supply. How can we have a regulated? I mean, they're looking at this very much like weed, right? Oh, we do legal weed. Why not legal fentanyl? Have a fentanyl shop on every corner. Heroin, meth, trank, whatever your drug is. So that's what this working group aimed to look at. And they have this sub-working group called the Substance Use Recovery Services Advisory Committee. How stupid is that? Absolutely insane. So here's how they went about trying to research what the best ideas would be. So they went out and they did some data collection as they tried to formulate, what are we going to do here? What does safe supply look like? It says between May of 2023 and September of 2023, a research team at the University of Washington went out on the streets. They interviewed 457 people in Seattle who use drugs. The study revealed high acceptability of safer supply programs among people who currently use drugs, which is not a surprise. They went out, they talked to drug users. 81% said, yeah, we would love it if you just gave us the drugs. Mm-hmm. Wow, I'm actually surprised it's not 100%. My guess is the other 19% were probably so high out of their minds that they didn't even realize they were being asked a question. It says most participants indicated that receiving a regulated opioid supply would be, quote, a lot less risky than their current supply. Well, no shit. I could get handed a tested supply from the government for free, courtesy of the taxpayer, versus having to go to Fentanyl Freddy on the corner, give him a couple crumpled up dollar bills, or some change I stole out of someone's center council after I broke in the window, and then take whatever he hands me. The other thing about that, as we get into what the recommendations will be, it's going to get worse and worse and worse, if you can believe it, as we progress. I'm going nuts. One of the things that disgusts me about that is we spent all this money and you sent UW researchers who are taxpayer funded in and of themselves out for a 4-month period of time to hit the streets and talk to drug abusers. And you spent that time and that valuable face-to-face contact not trying to usher them into treatment, but to ask them about, hey, if we gave you a safe, reliable supply, would you like that? All this money, all that effort. You could have been out there, 457 people making contacts that would have actually changed their lives. Hey, let's connect you to services today. No, we're not doing that. We're taking a study to see if you'd like government-provided drugs. Absolutely insane. So what are the benefits of this? Why are they even going out and considering this? Well, here's what they say safer supply would do. Documented and evaluated benefits across all models include a decrease in participation in crime, which makes sense, I guess. If you're not having to commit crimes to fund your drug habit, I guess maybe that'll stop you from committing crimes to get money. But I don't think it'll stop you from committing crimes while you're high on drugs. You might commit thefts to fund your drug habit. But when you're high out of your mind on drugs, you're much more likely to commit a violent offense. Never mind that, though. They say one of the other benefits to providing safe supply through the government, less street drug use among participants. Okay, but you're still giving them the same drugs. So they're just using them in a different location. But also, most of the drug users we're dealing with and talking about here are homeless. So they're still going to be using the drugs on the streets. They're just going to be using the drugs you gave them on the streets. That makes no sense. Here's one that I can't wrap my mind around. Increase in social well-being. How are you increasing social well-being, societal well-being, by having the government become the drug pushers? Access to employment and housing. Okay, I haven't seen anything in here that says that in exchange for the drugs, you're going to require that they get a job, or you're going to require that they get in housing, and you're still giving them drugs to get high, so how would they be more likely to hold down employment or housing if they're high on your drugs versus high on someone else's drugs? Also makes no sense. And lower risk of overdose death. Lower risk, but not no risk, clearly. So that's how they're justifying all of this. Now here is the piece de resistance. So they are evaluating four different frameworks to consider that were presented to them way back in September to the working group by experts. Four different frameworks that all could be used to provide a safe supply through the government, a regulated supply to drug users. This is one of the most insane documents I have ever seen in my life. And that's saying a lot. Four frameworks. Let's go through them, shall we? Framework one, prescription supervised consumption. So this is your quote unquote safe injection site model. But as opposed to bringing in your own drugs and just using them in a quote unquote safe controlled environment. No. This is the government helping those drugs be prescribed to you and even administered to you. So now you've got government funded workers providing the drug and even injecting it directly into your veins if you'd like. It says drugs are prescribed and administered in a supervised setting under the care of health professionals and or peer workers. Framework two, and that's not even the craziest of all the frameworks, by the way. Framework two, prescription unsupervised consumption. So this is basically drugs are prescribed and dispensed by a healthcare provider at a dedicated facility, but then you can take the drugs home and use them. So, you know, you go to your neighborhood pharmacy, get your fentanyl in a little bottle, get your heroin, and then you just go use them as you normally would. But now you got a bottle that says RX on it. Okay, here's the craziest one. Framework three, buyer's club. A network of people in community would pool money and buy from a source and then use that to purchase drugs in bulk, test them, package them, and provide them back to the community. Buyers come together and collectively purchase the drugs, i.e. Dallas Buyers Club. Grassroots, no physical location, less institutional. Read that again. Network of people in community who pool money and buy from a source and then use that to purchase drugs in bulk, test them, package, and provide them back to the community. So people get to what? Buy drugs in bulk from the cartel? Test that batch of drugs that you got from the Mexican drug cartel? Make sure that they're not laced with anything unexpected? And then what? Put them in little baggies that say Washington Healthcare Authority? And then go distribute them that way? So basically drug addicts can pool their money to buy drugs in bulk? What on earth are you talking about? And then the fourth framework, drugs can be made available without a prescription in dispensaries. So basically, complete decriminalization, just allow there to be dispensaries that sell illicit drugs. It doesn't matter which of those frameworks they think is the best one at the end of the day. They came out with their recommendations a week ago. It doesn't even matter. None of those are acceptable. There's not one. Not one of those is acceptable in any civilized society. And here we are, millions of dollars goes into this. Now we're in year four, pass the bill, create the working group, send out researchers into the community to contact drug users. Would you like us to give you free drugs in a controlled environment? Why, yes, I would. Okay, here's some frameworks. What are ways we can do this? Should government bureaucrats literally just get the drugs and inject it straight into their veins? Should we allow people to go out and purchase directly legally from the drug cartel? Get their little dime-sized baggies out and then go distribute it courtesy of the taxpayers of Washington State. None of those are acceptable. And this is what they were planning to do all along. Those four recommendations were introduced back in September to this working group. Now, you might think, like, how does such insane stuff even make it to paper? How can someone sit there and actually type this? Not to mention the thing I mentioned earlier about, and then after we do all this, what are we going to do for the drug pushers? What are we going to do for the drug users? Harry Heroin, Freddie Fentanyl, on the corner, the poor out-of-work drug dealers. So that'll be the next working group. Reinstating employment for previously employed drug pushers. Working group. So I was thinking, you know, how does this happen? How are people this insane? I mean, one-party rule does it, right? This is why I'm so opposed to one-party rule above and beyond anything else. It's not about getting Republicans elected. It's about having fewer Democrats elected. So you get in this, like, mind hive where, oh, that sounds nice. You know, and they word it in a way that sounds nice. Like, I go back quick to that one about the finding jobs for out-of-work drug dealers. Alternative lawful income sources for people who have been trapped in the illicit distribution economy and could be displaced by a safe supply program to prevent potential unintended consequences that would disadvantage communities most impacted. The way they word things and their word soup and the government, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, you want to find jobs for drug dealers because they're being impacted negatively by the government taking over drug dealing. So they put this nice ribbon on it, right? So you've got one party rule, so total groupthink. Sane people are too scared to push back, right? They have this total misguided way. They're thinking about this from a profit standpoint, right? How can the government profit off of all of this? Because that's what they want to do. They don't want to fix it, or we would have fixed it by now, because there are other states that don't have the crisis that we have. But I thought, how, you know, these are the four recommendations, is no one pushing back. Because when they create these working groups for a variety of things in Olympia, they actually say, here's how many positions are on the work group. This is like in the law, right, for any working group. Here's how many positions, and they have to represent a wide array of stakeholders. So then you have, and there's sort of some, you know, Republicans and Democrats trying to come to an agreement on what the working group will be. So in a situation like this, you'd have people with lived experience, right? You'd have people who are out there connecting with drug users. You'd have people who, what else? Provide treatment, right? Do they, you know, at least one representative. And you'd probably have a member of law enforcement, right, on the panel of 12, just to make sure that you're getting some sort of holistic look. Well, here's what struck me when I looked at the work group members. So there are 12 positions. Well, there are supposed to be 12 positions. But if you look down at the bottom, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 vacancies. Anyone want to guess what those vacancies are? Because it'll really help you understand how these are the recommendations that the working group came up with and think are actually viable. Well, the only two positions of the 12 that are supposed to be filled by a treatment provider are vacant. The only two positions that would have an expert in actual drug treatment are vacant. So anyone interested in treating drug addiction, there's no voice for that in this working group. You know the other one that's vacant? A representative of sheriffs and police chiefs. So the one position that would have been filled by a law enforcement professional to, I don't know, tell them this is a really shitty idea and it won't actually make our communities more safe. Vacant. You know what's not vacant? Expert in anti-racism and equity in healthcare delivery systems. Oh, I'm glad that position is filled. Absolutely insane. I mean, what do you even do with that? And you know that some form of this, they're not going to do all of this for nothing. They're not going to do this whole 4 years, create a bill, create a working group. No, when they created the bill, and when Democrats crafted it, the idea was always for the state to get involved somehow in drug supply, or else they wouldn't have thought about it in the first place. The purpose of it was to look at safe supply. But they want to distance themselves from it. They want to say they studied it, right? They want to say they called in experts, right? So then they can come a few years later, distance themselves from it and say, this is what the experts say we have to do. We have to start dealing drugs directly to the drug addicts. So this coming session, now that the recommendations are out, that's exactly what they'll do. They're going to start talking about safe supply. And they're going to start talking about the state being the drug dealers and the taxpayers being the ones who foot the bill. Mentally insane. Much more where that came from. In this whole, we have a theme on the show today. And it's like solutions that make things worse. Solutions that make things worse. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge for many years now. I'm a member of the First Mark family. Nicole's a member of the First Mark family. Our business is insured through First Mark, and that's because it's just an exceptional service. There's no reason in the world why you need to be out there trying to figure out your insurance situation on your own. If you're one of the many people, for instance, who's been getting renewal notices and they've been higher and higher and higher, have First Mark deal with it. What they'll do through the First Mark Challenge, schedule some time to talk to them on the phone, go over your current insurance, talk about your insurance needs, maybe any life changes that you have going on. They'll go out, they'll shop the market for you, they'll come back with their recommendations, and they're going to make sure that one, most importantly, you have the coverage that you need if the unthinkable happens. You don't want to be underinsured. We work too hard for what we have. But two, that you're not paying for insurance you don't need, which was the case for Mike and I. And I think that's really the big thing, right? And that you have the right insurance at the right price. And First Mark never charges you anything for their services. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. We get so many wonderful stories from undivided viewers and listeners. Jacob says they recently changed over to First Mark. First Mark saved them $600 on their home, $2,000 a year for the family's cars. He says they were honest and easy to work with. So do what Jacob did, what so many others have done. Schedule time to take the First Mark challenge today. firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, solutions that don't do anything. Part two. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington State, chair of the House Progressive Caucus, so she's really, call it progressive, it's socialism. She held a rally in a press conference today in Washington, D.C. for her new bill. Or no, it wasn't today. It was a couple days ago, right? Sorry. A couple days ago for her new bill, Housing Not Handcuffs, the federal act to solve homelessness with real solutions without arrests or tickets. So she introduced this, had a little rally, which I'll play part of coming up in a moment. Let's talk about the Housing Not Handcuffs Act, which they created its own website. It's called housingnothandcuffs.org, which I thought was interesting. So for their bill, they have a whole website that talks about what the bill does. It says, introduced by Rep. Pramila Jayapal and Rep. Maxwell Frost on June 26th, the Housing Not Handcuffs Act is restorative legislation that, there's a buzzword, restorative legislation that prevents federal agencies from arresting, ticketing, or otherwise criminalizing homelessness, created in response to the horrific results of the Grants Pass Supreme Court case. Housing Not Handcuffs ensures that homeless people cannot be arrested or ticketed by federal police when living on federal lands, when there are no other options without blocking traffic, asking for help or donations in public places, practicing religion in public spaces, or living in a vehicle without blocking traffic. It says, instead of wasting taxpayer money on ineffective and cruel bills that punish people, Housing Not Handcuffs eliminates criminalization as an option and redirects elected officials to focus on the real solutions to homelessness, housing and supportive services that everyone needs to thrive. Wow. Okay, there's a lot that I can say about that. First of all, no one's arresting anyone for practicing religion in public spaces. That's just not happening. So that's just a totally made up thing. But you're saying you want to federally eliminate punishment as an option, eliminate criminalization as an option. So you don't want there to be any tool whatsoever by which police can clear a homeless encampment, can remove a derelict RV that's been parked outside someone's house for 7 months. She literally wants there to be no option for cities and counties and states to deal with homelessness. And you'll note that nothing in that synopsis of it talks about, here's how we'll get them into a better situation. Just like the last story, not how are we going to get them out of drug addiction? No, how are we going to make it easier for them to be addicted to drugs? Not how are we going to get them out of homelessness so they're not sleeping in their cars, and they're not sleeping on federal land, and they're not panhandling on the street corner. No, how are we going to make it easier for them to be homeless? That is the mindset, and that is the difference. It's not problem-solving oriented. It's about keeping people in filth, squalor, despair, and keeping them dependent on the government. That's what progressivism and socialism is all about. And that's what this is all about. I want to play a couple clips from this press conference. I will say, her mic sounded horrible, so please forgive me for that. It's not our fault. It's the fault of whoever wired up this press conference. But here she is spitting out some data for us.
Zero.
Zero.
That's how many counties or cities in this country exist where someone can afford to rent a one-bedroom apartment on minimum wage. 1,628. That's the average cost of a one-bedroom rental apartment. And to afford that, you would need a salary of $58,000, nearly four times the federal minimum wage. 7.1 million. That's the shortage of affordable and available rental homes in this country. So all of these factors come together to show us that homelessness is not a personal failure. It is a policy failure. It's a failure of government to help those who need it the most.
Okay, let's say it's a failure of government. Let's go with that. Let's go with that. I mean, what she's talking about is socialism and having a social safety net that's so profound that no one can ever be homeless because the government steps in to provide them everything they need. That's socialism. But let's go with what she's saying, and it is, call it a failure of the government. Where is the worst homeless crisis in the nation? What state has one of the worst homeless crises in the nation? Washington State. What part of Washington State has one of the worst homeless crises? Seattle. What district does she represent? The congressional district in Seattle. So she is the congresswoman for the city in the state that has one of the worst homeless crises in the nation, okay? So again, she said it's a failure of government, right? She said it's a failure of government. Who is in control of the government in Seattle? Democrats, universally. Who's in control of state government in Washington? Democrats, universally. So if we are to believe her and it is a failure of government, would it not be her failure? Would it not be the failure of Democrats in Olympia? Would it not be the failure of Democrats in the city of Seattle and in other progressive cities in Washington state where the bulk of the homeless crisis exists? So you can say it's a failure of government, but then you have to own that failure. You're saying it's a housing crisis? It's a lack of affordable housing? Okay, well, what has been the single biggest driver of moving development, new home construction, new apartment construction, getting rental units off the market? What has been the single biggest driver of that? Progressive policies. They just passed rent control. The builders said, don't do it. We won't build new units there. They passed it anyway. So you're saying what you think the problem is, but everything you're saying points back to you. And so I have to believe that you don't actually care about fixing the problem, because you would do the exact opposite of what progressives and progressive Democrats are doing right now. But of course, it's not a failure of government. It's not. I mean, the response to homelessness is absolutely a failure of government. The response once someone falls into homelessness is absolutely a failure of government. So let me be clear about that. But it has nothing to do with not providing enough housing units. It has everything to do with policies like drug decriminalization, because homelessness is a drug crisis. So when we have fentanyl flowing into our communities, supply that's meeting demand, the thing that would have stopped it the quickest is cutting off supply and criminalizing demand. But they refuse to do either. Democrats won't advocate for closed borders, so the fentanyl kept flowing in, certainly under the last administration. And then they won't prosecute anyone who's dealing and using drugs out on the streets. That's what's made the homeless crisis worse than anything else. It is a personal failure, first of all, in the vast majority of instances for someone to be homeless. Are there the rare instances where someone truly is down on their luck and loses a job unexpected out of nowhere? Absolutely. But we have nonprofits that operate with annual budgets in excess of $10 million a year. That stated goal is to get those people help. So if they can't fund help for those people, then what are they doing? Then somebody needs to look into them for criminal money laundering and fraud. So we have all the money we need in the private sector to help people who are genuinely down on their luck, who just need a place to live and are operating on the margins of society, who aren't addicted to drugs, aren't dealing with mental health issues, whatever it is. And then if the government really wants to help the other ones, it needs to deal with substance abuse in a meaningful way, not step in and have the government deal drugs to the public, which is what they're considering now. And it can't have this permissive environment where it's okay to be homeless wherever you want, which is exactly the bill that she's presenting. What does she call it? Housing Not Handcuffs Act. So she wants to eliminate any criminal penalties for being homeless anywhere. And then she thinks the homeless crisis will get better? That's absolutely insane. And by the way, the goal is never to arrest homeless people. You show me in Washington State one police force that is out there actually putting handcuffs on homeless people. That's not happening. It's just not happening. It's completely manufactured. But they need to have the ability to go in and sweep an encampment. And yes, it might push people from A to B, but they're there repeatedly offering people access to treatment and services. And if they say no the fourth, fifth, sixth time, then they're going to get cleared out of the area. So she's totally creating this false narrative about what's happening here. And of course, she's talking, there's this one instance she talks about out of Oregon involving federal agents under Donald Trump. I think we have this clip, right, Nicole?
Trump used federal police to evict people experiencing homelessness from a federal forest in my home state neighbor to the south, Oregon, threatening a $5,000 fine and a year in jail. Now, I know that Trump and his billionaire buddies don't understand this, but $5,000 is a lot of money for the rest of us. In what world does taking this money from people help them to get housed? And in what world does giving someone a criminal record for sleeping outside help them to get housed?
Again, that's not what's happening. When you have some sort of crime on the books, there's a punishment that has to go along with the crime. You think they're really enforcing that for on a homeless person, you have to pay me $5,000? It's not happening. But by having that criminal violation in place, hey, you can't set up tents in a federal forest. That allows federal officials, or in the case of a city, you can't have a tent set up in a public park. That gives them the ability and the authority to go in and clear the tent. So absent that, which is what she wants there to be no laws on the books about that, then we'll have our beautiful federal forests. Totally fair game. Would you like that? What's a popular area here? What's a popular federal area? Let's just go Mount Rainier National Park, right? Would you want there to be homeless tents littered on all the trails at Mount Rainier National Park? What about Rattlesnake Ridge, another popular one I think is owned by the city of Seattle? It's in King County. Would you want there to be homeless tents all throughout the park there at Rattlesnake Ridge? That's what Congresswoman Millie Jayapal wants, with police to have no authority, or on federal land, federal agents to have no authority to go in there and move it. Yeah, that's the ideal world, right? And that's somehow humane. Helping people stay in poverty, in filth, in squalor, in unsafe conditions. That's the socialist dream world, apparently. And make no mistake, that's what this is. They will tie a bow on it and a lipstick on a pig and call themselves progressives. But that's just socialism. More and more, when you look at progressive Democrats, they have completely embraced socialism. And we have to start calling it what it is. All right, let's keep going on solutions that don't actually solve any, what do they call it? A solution in search of a problem. Hey, let's create a solution for a problem that doesn't even exist, just so we can make ourselves feel good, okay? So we talked on the show previously, gosh, it's been a few months now since we broke this story. The city of Olympia, which if you're not familiar, I know we have people out of state who watch the show. It's like, well, it's the state capital, right, in Olympia, but it's also one of the more progressive cities in the state. I would say like Seattle, Olympia, Bellingham, three of the most progressive cities in the state. So they had a study, again, funded with taxpayer money, where they looked at ideas for reparations. How can we help our city's Black residents? And it wasn't even about Black residents who are the descendants of slaves, Black residents who were subjected to housing discrimination. No, it was just like, no matter what your history is and your background, if your skin pigmentation is correct, we want to gift things to you. And there were, like, I think close to 100 different recommendations that came out of this taxpayer-funded working group. And I just want to revisit some of those. We've talked about them on the show previously, but it's going to inform the new update to the story. So some of the things they were thinking of: supporting Black businesses through grants of up to $100,000, offering personal tax deductions, yes, lower taxes if you're Black, provide grants to Black-owned businesses, establish a private fund for reparations, provide direct cash payments to individuals harmed by racial discrimination with no basis whatsoever to determine what actual harm based on race looks like, establish a 90% guarantee fund for any kind of real estate purchased by a Black person, establish a Black-owned bank within the city, provide a taxpayer-funded, guaranteed minimum income fund for Black residents. So let's say you're a Black resident and you're working at a Starbucks and you're not making enough money because they've indexed it, right? Here's the minimum income for Black residents in the city of Olympia. So you've got a job at Starbucks, let's say, and you're not quite there. They want to fill the gap. Well, we got to get you back up to that basic minimum income. So then you and I, we have to pay the rest to the person based on their skin pigmentation. So loans for Black-owned businesses, tax breaks for Black people, direct cash payments, funds to help them buy a house. Insane stuff. So taking reparations to the extreme. So the city of Olympia is very serious about this, right? Well, now there is an effort to take what the city of Olympia is doing and do it statewide. I told you, it's only a matter of time. That's why we talk about these hyper-local things. We always say what happens in these progressive cities makes its way to the state house eventually. And so all that stuff I just talked about is now going to be talked about statewide, funded by state taxpayer money, at a time when we're supposed to believe we're in a budget crisis. This from the Olympia. And the headline, Olympia's ongoing study of reparations options will aid statewide efforts. The Olympia City Council last week held a study session to discuss research findings and a path forward for considering policies that would provide reparations for descendants of slaves, which is the stuff we just talked about. So how do they move forward with this? It says Assistant City Manager Susan Grisham said there's now state-level reparations actions moving forward that Olympia's study will help inform. Grisham said $300,000 will fund the Charles Mitchell and George Washington Bush study on reparative action for Washington State. She said the study will take place from 2025 to 2027 and will produce, quote, detailed policy proposals that will be a roadmap for implementation. Just to sort of reset. So Olympia taxpayers foot the bill for a study to study reparations ideas on a city level. And now there's $300,000 going to study the same thing again on a statewide level over the next 2 years. Because what did we say? They want to do these things. They're going to do these things. That's why they create the working groups and the studies. They just need to be able to couch it in experts told us to do this. So they spend a bunch of money that's just needless because they're going to do it anyway. And then in 2 years, they release all the ideas. Mayor Dante Payne, who's the mayor of Olympia, a Black man, said part of the work the state commission will be doing is hiring a consultant to determine how to provide reparations and how much genealogy will play a part, okay? Because again, you know, I think there is a big difference between, hey, should we pay reparations directly to the descendant of an enslaved person versus should we just give reparations to anyone whose skin is dark enough? So he said, part of what the state is going to do is hire this consultant and figure out, is it fair for genealogy to play a part? Because here's what the mayor of Olympia says. Again, a black man, it's important context. I cannot tell you who my great-grandparents are. I can't tell you who my great-great-grandparents are. So if you're African-American and you're in this country and all of a sudden you stop and cannot continue to trace your lineage back, that is evidence enough that you are a descendant of an enslaved person. Most likely. So what he's saying is if you don't know your great-great-grandparent and you're black, you were probably descendant from a slave, and that's going to be enough to get reparations from the state. Okay. I mean, I don't know who my great-great-grandparents are. I'm sure I could figure it out, right? But if your family's genealogy record isn't set in stone, not enough information there, somebody along the line didn't do enough due diligence to make sure that you could look back that far, well, you're probably a descendant of a slave. And that's all the evidence the state needs. So all the craziness happening in Olympia, the most robust conversation in the entire country happening around reparations, there's now going to be a $300,000 study to look at it statewide. And by the way, we already have reparations in Washington State. It was a story we broke on the show 2 years ago. They called it the Covenant Home Ownership Program. And right now, at this moment, if you're buying a new house in Washington State, you are paying into a fund that now, as of this legislative session, gifts down payments of $120,000 on average to black first-time homebuyers, regardless of whether they can prove that their ancestors were slaves or subjected to housing discrimination. So right now in our state, black first-time homebuyers are getting checks, free money from us, free for them, not for us, of up to $120,000. So they don't have to pay the down payment on the home because that's fair and that's equitable and that's equality, right? Absolutely insane. I told you today's show was going to piss you off. Well, gear up because we've got a doozy of an unbelievable, the Washington Education Association instructing teachers on how to obstruct lawful immigration efforts coming up next. First, if you are planning, plotting your retirement, which I think we all are, right? I think the day you start working is the day you start thinking about not working anymore and what that looks like. It's just the unfortunate reality that we're all in. So you want to make sure that that dream is properly protected. I think that's a no-brainer. That's obvious, right? So let's say you've been with the same money manager for years. Have you thought about getting a second opinion? We get second opinions on all sorts of things. So to me, one of the most important things you're going to do in your life, saving for retirement and planning your dream retirement so you can live out your glory days the way you see fit, why would you not get a second opinion on that? And just make sure, especially in today's economy, you know, there's still a lot of uncertainty with the tariffs, what's happening globally, etc. You want to make sure that your allocations are such that they aren't exposed to unnecessary risk. Risk is always part of the equation, but Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital specialize in managing risk to help you weather periods of time like this. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Schedule your second opinion by signing up for their free Know Your Risk portfolio review. And Zach will just take an honest look at it and he'll give you his honest assessment. Maybe he's going to look at that and be like, oh my God, this is not good. Or he'll say, hey, this is actually pretty good. I think that you've weathered the last 6 months pretty well. So that's a sign you've got a strong portfolio. So don't put it off. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. Maybe not a surprise, but I guess I'm always interested in how ideologically driven the teachers union is and how that sort of finds its tentacles into classrooms and informs the future political beliefs of the young minds of America. So the Washington Education Association, which is the teachers union in Washington, held a webinar offering tips for employees to obstruct ICE enforcement. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Okay, so this happened last week. The WEA, which is just an extension of the Democratic Party, sent out an email to all school staff and said, since some paras and many of our students, coworkers and parents of our students are immigrants, this is an important opportunity to learn more about how to stay safe. It's members only, so join now. It's members only, but we have people on the inside. So we know what was taught and trained into staff members at our schools about what's happening. And I think this is not only about clearly they're trying to obstruct immigration enforcement, but also the lies that they're pushing about what's happening with immigration under President Donald Trump. So the title of the webinar, A Safe Space to Learn, Protecting Students, Respecting Their Families, and Building Community. And it's got a sad little boy behind a chain link fence, and he's like, help me, help me. And it was taught by J.W. Stancil, attorney at law, he, him, his. Thank you for clarifying. Okay, so the first slide, where does the labor movement fit in? You know, why is the teachers union talking about this stuff? It says stripping immigrants and refugees of their rights is part of the same playbook as eroding and ultimately eliminating free public education and restricting or eviscerating the rights of any workers to organize. Okay, so they think that like the immigration enforcement, and I guess that's fair, right? The people carrying out immigration enforcement under President Donald Trump, they don't want to eliminate free public education, but they definitely want school choice. So I think it's just about obstructing Trump, right? Let's just obstruct Trump on everything, because Trump also wants school choice, and apparently he wants to strip immigrants and refugees of their rights. But that's how they're shoehorning their way into this situation. This slide really grinded my gears, really grinds my gears. Framing the issues, what does mass deportation look like? Well, according to them, mass deportation looks like people literally in full-on SWAT gear, military fatigues with big scary weapons and helmets and goggles on. No, that's what it looks like when they have to respond to you lefty lunatics assaulting ICE agents and blocking unlawful deportations. But it's like, it's funny that the thing is titled Framing the Issues. Yeah, that's how they want to frame the issues. They want to make teachers believe that that is literally the federal government carrying out mass deportation. I don't know where that picture came from. Somebody should do a reverse image search, but I guarantee it's down in LA, them responding to the riots and the assaults and stuff on ICE agents. Absolutely insane. Okay, let's move on, shall we? And here's where I get into, these are supposed to be educators, right? And they're educating kids. And they're just manipulating, absolutely manipulating reality. Who are the at-risk immigrants? It says 68% have been in the U.S. over 10 years, 45% over 20 years. Far less likely to commit crimes than citizens. Far more likely to be victims of crimes. 45% pay federal tax withholding and Social Security withholding into accounts they will never benefit from. Let's just really one sec here. They're saying that the immigrants who are at risk are far less likely to commit crimes than citizens. How do you know that? How do you know that? Is someone, now you could look at crime stats nationally, and there are a lot of states where you could absolutely tell, like in red states, hey, we have an immigrant who committed a crime. But in the state of Washington, because of our sanctuary policies, and the same is true for other states, and there are many sanctuary states in the union, by state law, an immigrant, an illegal alien who commits a crime is treated no differently in the system than a lawful resident of that state. So in Washington state, if I killed someone tomorrow and I went to prison, and an illegal alien killed someone tomorrow and went to prison, as far as any database in the state of Washington is concerned, there is no difference between the two of us. And there is nothing by law that's allowed to indicate that that murderer in there is illegal. So you literally cannot tell us that immigrants are far less likely to commit crimes than citizens, because in states like Washington, they don't treat illegal aliens any differently in the system, even if they commit a criminal offense. So you literally can't tell us that. So they're just lying. They're making stuff up, right? Then they continue to make stuff up. It says, why don't they just get in line? So this is like a response that the teachers can give to the very reasonable question of, hey, you know, why don't they come in legally? It says there is no line. Legal immigration is extremely difficult. Okay. No, there literally is a line. Yes, it's difficult. But there are people today going through the process of becoming lawful citizens of this country. So don't say that there is no line. DACA and parolee recipients have no path to permanent residence and are always at risk of the president ending their temporary protected status. Also not true. If Democrats and Republicans, both parties have had ample opportunity over the last several years when they've had full control of the House, Senate, and the presidency to give DACA recipients American citizenship. They have chosen not to because they've chosen instead to use them as political pawns. And it's not just Republicans. Democrats did it too. Democrats had full control on multiple occasions where they could have given DACA recipients full legal citizenship that never could have been revoked. And they chose not to do it. Deportation relief is extremely difficult to obtain. Political asylum, for example, is rarely granted. Okay? Marriage to a U.S. citizen is no guarantee. You must ask for difficult to obtain waiver of illegal presence. So they're basically, and then one of the sources, they cite John Oliver from Last Week Tonight. Gotcha. Okay, yeah. Really using some great sources there. How deportation works. Again, this is teachers being fed misinformation that they will go on, no doubt, to feed their own families and the students of the minds that they're supposed to shape, right? Unauthorized presence in the United States is not a crime. Yes, it is a crime. It is a crime, okay? That whole narrative that it's not a crime is just not true. It says violation of civil law, like cheating, it says violation is a civil law, like cheating on the IRS on taxes. So they're comparing it to cheating the IRS on taxes. You know what you can go to prison for? Cheating the IRS on your taxes. Mm-hmm. In fact, people go to prison for it all the time because it is a crime. So that's just stupid. And an attorney taught this course? Well, mm-hmm. That attorney is an idiot. It says, because deportation for the rest of your life, where you may suffer imprisonment, torture, or death, is not a criminal punishment, a person has none of the rights that even a person accused of shoplifting has. I don't even know what that means. That sentence doesn't even make sense. He says, you have no right to court-appointed counsel in deportation proceedings. 86% of detained immigrants don't have attorneys, 63% overall. Okay, here's an idea. Don't come to the country illegally. And then you don't have to worry about court-appointed counsel and deportation proceedings. And then it says, this is not a Democrat or thing or a Republican thing. Yeah, I agree. Because we should all agree that illegal immigration is bad for the country and that we have to fix our broken immigration system and that we need to get criminals out of our country and then we need to make sure that people have a better path to citizenship so they can come here and they can contribute to our economy. You know, the left wants to paint this as people who support deportation don't believe that immigrants make our country great. No one is saying immigrants don't contribute to our country. No one is saying immigrants don't belong in our country. But everyone who has a head on their shoulders, right, left, and center, understands that coming here lawfully, there has to be a process to do that. But the Washington Education Association just literally wants anyone to be able to come here for any reason and to be able to stay here as long as they want without any fear of deportation. And that is not a country. They said, and here's where it gets into the tips portion of it. One answer to one question is all ICE needs. Where are you from? This is an example, I guess, they're giving. Where are you from? If you answer, I am from Mexico, the burden shifts to you to prove your right to be in the U.S. So they're saying if ICE asks you, where are you from? You should say the United States. So they're just telling you to lie to federal agents. But also, I don't think ICE is around on the street asking people who have brown skin, hey, where are you from? It's just not happening. They go on to say, not answering questions helps protect those who are more vulnerable by presenting a united front where we all stand together and no one stands apart. When we all refuse to answer questions, we directly resist the fascists' efforts to divide us into good people and bad people. We can present a united front against the forces that want to tear us apart, that thrive on hate and want to destroy our communities. This is a taught by the Washington, to teachers in Washington State, that we have to, this is an attorney, by the way, who is encouraging them to break the law and lie to federal immigration agents. An attorney who should be disbarred. Should you not be disbarred as an attorney if you're actively encouraging people to break the law? What was this guy's name again, Nicole? Because I bet we have some enterprising viewers who would love to submit a complaint with the Bar Association. J.W. Stancil. S-T-A-N-S-E-L-L. J.W. Stancil. Attorney at law. He, him, his. I'm pretty sure attorneys can't encourage people to break the law, which is what you're doing here. And then telling all these teachers, reinforcing what a lot of these teachers of the WEA already believe, that this is about resisting fascists. This is just like resisting Hitler. What you're doing is just as justified as people who resisted Hitler. So why wouldn't they feel like, yeah, I would have resisted Hitler. I'm going to fight the fascists, so I'm not going to tell ICE anything. We can present a unified front against the forces that want to tear us apart and that thrive on hate and want to destroy our communities. So now the teachers are being taught that Donald Trump, conservatives, anyone who supports deportation of criminals, thrives on hate, wants to tear our communities apart. And then those teachers go into classrooms and they teach that to kids. Absolutely insane. Not a surprise, but important to know what's happening behind the scenes at the Washington Education Association, nonetheless.
And that photo is from the LA riots.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Yep. Reverse image search. The LA riots. That's not what mass deportation looks like. That's what responding to a left-wing violent mob looks like, you absolute asshats. All right, coming up next, we'll get to some national news, kind of on a similar front, actually. CNN promoting an individual who has started an ICE tracker app to, I guess, hunt ICE agents down. Wild. First, if you are thinking about moving out of the state because of all the insane shit I just told you, well, Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com is your guy. Wes Jones has been a real estate agent in this area for a long, long time. He knows the market ups and downs. He's also been, unfortunately, working with a lot of people who are moving out of state. He even worked with someone the other day who said they want to escape Washington and they're moving to California, which I'm thinking, I don't know. Have we really become worse than California? Maybe in some ways, but that's not where I would go to escape. But anyway, regardless of the reason that you're selling your home, maybe it's time to downsize, maybe it's time to upsize. I'm always looking at houses to upsize that I can never afford. Do you ever do that? You just get on the web.
Oh, yeah.
You're just looking at like real estate in Texas.
Oh, yeah. I get things from Redfin all the time. Emails from Redfin.
Yeah. I'll put like my range on Redfin. Oh, I don't know, $5 million to $10 million.
Just in case you look at it. Win the lottery or something.
Yeah, it keeps you motivated, know. Right? Anyway, but Wes Jones will be more reasonable with that with you and talk about your home, what you can sell your home for, what you might be able to get into. But he also specializes in helping you out if you need some cosmetic upgrades to make sure you maximize the offers that you get on your home. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, in some national news, but in a similar vein, so the federal government has said that it is going to go after anyone who's doxing ICE agents. But if you're CNN, you're going to support people who are doxing ICE agents. Of course, you're going to give them a platform. So they aired a story on a guy named Joshua Aaron. So he created an app that is used to track ICE agents and ICE enforcement actions. It's called ICE Block. I guess we're giving him attention now, too, but don't support his app, obviously. Attorney General Pam Bondi was on Fox News and she expressed her disappointment. I mean, not only in the existence of the app, which really is about telling people, here's where ICE is doing what, which puts them at great danger, especially in states like ours and down in California where they've already been attacked. And she went on Fox News and she's obviously, is this one, the CNN, this is about the app? Oh, there's two. Okay. So let's play part of this CNN report.
The Trump administration steps up ICE raids and mass deportations. One tech developer is pushing back with an app designed to track ICE activity in real time. It's called ICE Block, and it's controversial to say the least. CNN's Claire Duffy is with us now. How does this work, Claire, and what are the legal implications?
Yeah, John, I talked with Joshua Aaron, who is the longtime tech worker who developed this platform, and he said he really wants it to be an early warning system for people about the location of Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. So he says he does not want people interfering with those officers' activity, but he does want people to be able to avoid them altogether if they want.
Okay, so he's saying he doesn't want them to interfere, but he's giving them all the information they need in real time to interfere. So very much a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Here's what Pam Bondi had to say about it on Fox News.
Our ICE agents, all of our federal agents who are working hand in hand on these task force, our federal agents from the Justice Department could be injured. He's giving a message to criminals where our federal officers are, and he cannot do that. And we are looking at it. We are looking at him, and he better watch out because that's not a protected speech That is threatening the lives of our law enforcement officers throughout this country. And shame on CNN. I just saw that for the first time when you showed it, that they're promoting that app. That's shame on them for doing that. That could hurt our law enforcement officers who are out there protecting them, protecting all of us every single day.
Yeah, and look, I actually don't know the legality of it. I'm not sure. I know she's the attorney general, so I'm not going to act like I know more about the law than she does. But I actually don't think the federal government can prevent you from saying, hey, there's an ICE raid at such and such location because it's happening. People can see it publicly. So I actually don't think that they could do anything about that specifically. But that doesn't mean it's right. It's obviously wrong. And CNN trying to, oh, it's kind of controversial, but let's talk about it and let's go through how the app works and let's talk to the guy who created it. Wow, such an entrepreneur, is just so insane. I mean, in what other circumstance, right, would we, or would not we, an entity like CNN, kind of both sides something like that? Like if you had someone who was had an app listing the locations of possible, what do they call it, net nanny operations. Like, hey, they're doing a sting here for predators who are talking to kids online, just found out about it, put the location in. I mean, because then you could do it and you could reach all the other predators online. Oh my gosh, this is you, and I'm going to avoid the area. If you have a meeting tonight with a young child, it's probably a police officer. You don't celebrate it or do that in any other realm, but when it's lawful immigration enforcement actions and federal agents who are carrying them out, who have been targeted, who have been assaulted, perfectly fine. Let's totally normalize that. It's crazy. I mean, there has to be some, because then who's to blame? Like if somebody uses this app that this guy has to find the location of an ICE raid they otherwise wouldn't have known about and they go out there and hurt ICE agents, who's to blame for that? Does that guy have some sort of responsibility and culpability in that? And I'll admit it's a complicated issue. I do think there are free speech protections that allow for you to take to your Facebook if that's how you choose to use it and warning people like, hey, ICE raid going down right now. I don't know how the government would stop that. But CNN giving a platform to an organized app to millions of viewers, I don't know if they still have millions of viewers, but somewhere in the realm of a million viewers, it's troubling. And I think it's just another indictment of the state of the news media. All right, so happening still right now, the big, beautiful bill working its way through the Senate, being debated, being amended, all of these things. Elon Musk, not happy at all. He said, every member of Congress who campaigned on reducing government spending and then immediately voted for the biggest debt increase in history should hang their head in shame and they will lose their primary next year. If it is the last thing I do on this earth. He also put out another similar tweet, just had a picture of Pinocchio on fire and it said liar. Very aggressive. Elon, I don't know what you're doing. I think it's one thing for Elon to come out and there's a lot of arguments to be made about the big, beautiful bill, right? Good things, bad things. You know, we talked a little bit about a part of it that's since been stripped out, you know, with selling aspects of federally owned land, et cetera. But for Elon to come in and say, for Republicans who vote for it, that he is going to help make sure that they get successfully primaried, what's the end goal there? What's the end goal there? Because this is something that obviously President Trump supports. It's like his big, beautiful bill. So you're going to support who in a primary election against the many, many Republicans who are going to vote for it? Are you going to support challengers to the left of them, challengers to the right of them? Are you going to support Democrats out of spite? And is that going to create a better country and ultimately help with our budgetary situation? No. So Elon is getting very petty because, again, if you're going to cost Republicans their seat because he's saying he's going to spend all this money on the primary elections, like to what end? Are you going to put people in there who are going to be even worse from a fiscal perspective just to teach them a lesson? So I don't know. Elon is kind of losing his mind a little bit. And I'll tell you, as popular as Elon has been, and I still love Elon. I mean, I think he's doing so many great things for the country. I'm not like turning my back on him just like that. But no one has more loyalty and popularity among the right than Donald Trump. You see these figures coming out one by one. I don't know, almost trying to like challenge Donald Trump for his like position on the right. Like Tucker Carlson came out and was very critical of him over Iran. Candace Owens has been very critical. And they both get swatted down so fast. Even names and personalities as big as them, like Tucker Carlson, the right swatted him down quick. Like, don't say that about Donald Trump. There is no one who the right is going to side with over Donald Trump. Literally no one. Elon Musk? Nope. They'll throw you away like yesterday's, what's the phrase? Throw you away like yesterday's
trash news. I don't know.
Don't you throw away trash the day of? I don't get it. They'll throw you in away like yesterday's.
Throw away like yesterday's.
Thank you. Now I need to know, because now it's bothering me. Somebody will tell me in the chat. Anyway, there's no one who the right is going to side with over Donald Trump. So it just, yesterday's news? I don't know. No one who the right is going to side with over Donald Trump. And so I don't know what Elon Musk is doing. I don't know that he's actually going to create a better situation for the country by doing that, or if he's even going to make good on it.
Donald Trump, by the way.
Trash, yesterday. Me and my brain. I've had 6 concussions. I need a little bit of a break for you when I have a brain fart. Donald Trump's response: Elon Musk knew long before he strongly endorsed me for president that I was strongly against the EV mandate. So he continues to believe that Elon Musk is driven by the EV benefit that came out. It is ridiculous and was always a major part of my campaign. Electric cars are fine, but not everyone should be forced to own one. Elon may get more subsidy than any other human being in history by far. And without them, he would probably have to close up shop and head back home to South Africa. No more rocket launches, satellites, or electric car production, and our country would save a fortune. Perhaps we should have Doge take a good hard look at this. Big money to be saved. Okay, let's stop it, boys. Elon Musk does a lot for this country. You look at everything from Starlink and the way he's able to get it in places where there's natural disasters or war or wherever it is, and everything he's doing with space exploration. Elon Musk is a net good to the United States of America and to the world as a whole. I think Donald Trump is a net good to the United States of America and the world as a whole. Get along, okay? Kumbaya, boys.
And by the way, it did pass the Senate.
Oh, it did. Okay. So I wasn't. 50-50
Vance broke the tie.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Must have happened while we were just starting the show today. So everybody just calm down, okay? If you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, you absolutely should be a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. You can check out what they're all about and sign up, rhawa.org. They can help with a lot of different things, so they're obviously down in Olympia trying to advocate on your behalf. They can also just help you with navigate all the paperwork and documents and new laws associated with being a landlord, which there's more and more and more to do by the day. A really good way to be introduced to what RHAWA does is to go to their Engage conference, which I will be speaking at yet again this year, October 22nd and 23rd at the Maiden Bauer Center in Bellevue. Anyone can register, even if maybe you're just interested in becoming a landlord or buying rental properties. You can be part of it as well. It's a 2-day conference, and they'll have all like policy discussions, networking opportunities. I'm going to be talking about how the media covers the housing issue. They'll give you education on sort of new laws and where their efforts stand in Washington State to try to push back against things like rent control. So Engage is a really fun conference, and there's a lot of good movers and shakers that are there. So rhawa.org to learn more about the organization, but also to sign up for the Engage conference if you'd like to go. I met a lot of Undivided fans at the Engage conference yesterday. It was quite nice. I was like a little rock star.
You mean last year?
Did I say yesterday?
Yes, you did.
Last year. I met a lot of Undivided viewers and listeners there. It was totally fun. Those concussions, you know, they really start to add up. Mm-hmm, they really start to add up. All right. I'm going to ask you guys in our daily subscriber show poll about the BBB, the Big Beautiful Bill. I asked you guys based on what you know about it. Do you support the Big Beautiful Bill? Yes, no, or don't know enough? Nicole? Yay, nay, or just don't know enough?
I mean, there were things that I didn't like about it that I had heard about. I definitely don't know enough. I don't think any of us do. It's, yeah. None of us have done that,
like,
much research.
1900 pages.
Yeah. Right. But I'm glad they took out some of the things they took out. And I think I support it at this point.
Yep. I'm in support of it as well. I'm in support of it. Not perfect. But I got to say, I also have learned to trust Donald Trump's judgment. I don't want taxes to increase. I want the tax breaks to be able to... or the tax cuts to be able to continue. So I think at this point, it's as good as it's going to get.
And their fear-mongering game on the left is so strong that I know it must be good.
Right, yeah. If they're that freaked out about it, right? Vicky does say, though, we need to reduce our debt, not add to it. And I agree. I'm concerned about the debt, too. I support the efforts of Doge. I think that we need to, over time, get our debt situation under control. And, you know, at some point, somebody has to be the one to do it. And it's never going to be popular when it happens. It can't happen overnight. but you don't want, you know, so much of that to tank the economy, and then you're worried about your numbers heading into the midterm. So I'm like, I don't know who's going to ever be willing to do it. Right. Even a lame duck president, because you're always going to be concerned about the midterms. You're always going to be concerned about your how history looks back at your at your presidency. And if you do something like that and it has a trickle-down effect to the economy, Donald Trump doesn't certainly want to be a president known for, like, tanking the economy. And so, you know, they just aren't going to do it.
I do think there are some things in here that are aimed at just kind of shifting that waste, right? So, yeah, with the Medicaid stuff, I mean, I don't know. It's very scary. The fear-mongering is strong, but it's supposed to turn things around. So we're not wasting so much, and it's, people aren't taking advantage to the same extent they are. Right. So hopefully that all helps. I don't know.
Diana Manning said, there were so many last minute changes to get it through the Senate. I've lost track of what's in and what's out. And I'll be honest too, we've been on the air since they've been doing all the amendments and stuff like that. So I'll take another good hard look at it today. Carlene admits, haven't looked into it enough. I'll wait for it to be signed, then I'll start caring. Got it. Okay. Truck driver Ken, like Nancy Pelosi said about Obamacare, we have to pass it to find out what's in it. I did find, oh my God, she did say that, didn't she?
And yeah, she did. And I think that is probably, that is how I am feeling about it, where all of this fear mongering and stuff, I'm like, let's just pass it and see what happens before we all go crazy.
Todd Welch over on Locals says, the Big Beautiful Bill is a flawed piece of legislation riddled with contradictions and driven by political expediency rather than principled governance. Crafted by lawmakers who claim to champion free markets while undermining them, the bill fails to deliver on economic liberty and fiscal responsibility. It's a temporary pro-growth tax policy, such as expensing expire in just 4 years, creating uncertainty that discourages long-term investment in industries like manufacturing. Todd, I think you've really read it more than anyone else. I can't read the rest of the comment because it is pretty long, but I shall read it, Todd. I shall read it. But good thoughts there on that. So we'll have more, obviously, on the show tomorrow on the Big Beautiful Bill, Big Bad Bill, whatever it is, we'll find out after it's signed. All right, let's see. Let's get to some comments, shall we, from the chat today. I'm getting really excited for 4th of July.
Okay.
Because it's on a weekend-ish.
And you actually get to enjoy it this
year. I actually get to enjoy it this year. So for the last 5 years, I've been stuck at home on 4th of July because my husband always works. And we have a dog that is freaked out by fireworks so much so that I worry she'll die every year because she gets so wound up and she's so old. So I told my husband, I swear to God, if you work on 4th of July this year, you're sleeping outside for the next 10 years. Because I was like, that's not fair. You can't make me the dog every year because it's miserable. So he's watching the dog and I'm going to go out and do something. And I'm very excited.
Fair.
All right. While considering safe supply drug program, Kim says on Facebook, this is such crap. Normalizing hardcore narcotics is annihilating a generation. Zero tolerance is the only way to sobriety and becoming a functional member of society. Fun treatment, not narcotics. And we hear
annihilating a generation. That's a good way to put it.
We hear that over and over. Great comment. We hear that over and over from people who've gotten out of drug addiction.
Yeah.
That for them, it was some sort of tough love moment, usually jail, that finally saved their lives and got them back on the straight and narrow. And so this idea that I don't hear a lot of stories of people who said, oh, harm reduction got me off of drugs. No. Never did. Krista, of all the insanity that comes out of Washington, this might take the cake. Give addicts drugs, but take away health care for drug addicted babies. Yep. Mm-hmm. You can't hate the government in Washington enough. Mm-hmm. Oh, a compliment from Miranda. Interesting. Oh, that's funny. It says, R on Patreon said, Miranda's the best, trying this new tactic to get their comment read because Miranda's handling the comments. Yeah, I bet if you compliment Miranda, you're more likely to get your comment read.
Probably.
Aside from that new drug program just being a terrible idea, wouldn't using tax money to buy anything illegal be illegal? Yeah, you'd think. Well, they're talking about like prescription grade narcotics that could supplement the feeling you get from being high as one of the options, which like there's stuff like methadone, for instance. But yeah, if you're going to like their Dallas Buyer Club's model, how can the government authorize you to go out and purchase literally traffic drugs?
I mean, from the cartels, you're literally funding.
Well, I added that part, but who else are you going to buy large supplies of fentanyl?
Well, I mean, it's true.
From?
I mean, yeah, exactly. Where else are you going
to
get it?
Literally, no one else has it. You'd have to get it from a drug trafficker.
Things like that, I guess you could get from drug companies that supply it for other reasons, right? Isn't it?
Well, yeah, but you can in the pill form, but that's not what people are taking, right?
Right. I'm just saying that might be where they get it, I guess. They end up getting
heroin.
I don't know. It's just nuts.
Lost their minds. Let's see.
I think it's all intentional.
Of course it is.
So I don't even know that they've lost their minds. They're just disturbed, disgusting people.
I think it's intentional for some, mm-hmm. but I think a lot of them aren't smart enough for something like this to be intentional.
They're being
and
used.
A destruction of society. Mm-hmm. They're being used, and it's painted as something that feels good, right? Let's see. On Jayapal's housing not handcuffs bill, Cynthia says, when you take away the fear of consequences, chaos is certain. Yep.
And I love how she was saying $5,000 might not be enough not much to Trump, but it is to us. I was looking to see how much she was worth, and it's.
She also has like multiple homes.
Most of the assumptions is $5 million. So I think she's all right with that $5,000.
Yeah. On Olympia reparations study, Mr. Happy, how is this not segregation? It is. It's racist. Yeah. It's absolutely
it's very racist.
It's discrimination. A country guy. Hey, I have an idea. Let's give reparations to the families of all people who were held as slaves in the state of Washington, which is zero. So, yes, great idea. WEA instructing teachers to avoid ICE. Necro Two Shoes says, I believe telling someone how to break the law is considered obstruction. Yeah. Did YouTube give everybody their names back?
Yeah, it did.
Well, that's weird. I wonder why for a day it changed things. That's super strange. CNN promoting that ICE tracker. Matthew Cook says activism disguised as journalism, which most journalism is these days. At least we don't pretend. That's what I always say to all these like mainstream media who you're not a journalist. Fine. But at least I don't pretend to be unbiased. Mm-hmm. Isn't that better than them saying they're unbiased, fair and balanced, or whatever it is, and then just promoting ICE trackers and doing crazy stuff and diminishing the insane stances of the socialist running for mayor of New York City? Let's see here. Other comments, super chats. CP says, we just got our renewal letter for our tabs. The cost is $382.25, highway robbery. The question is, are you going to pay it? That's the real question. Mm. Salty, what the heck, Brandy? You get us all worked up and then tell us to calm down. I think I told you to calm down and then I got you worked back up. Yeah.
Love
yeah,
it.
That's this show, right? Mm-hmm. We try to have fun.
Tally roll.
Somebody's got to talk to you guys about these things. All right, good comments per the usual. Wow, going long today. Going long today and every day. Let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, our beloved Senator John Fetterman. He's just over it.
Oh my God! I just want to go home. I've missed our entire trip to the beach. My family's going to be back before we on that. So, I'm going to vote no. There's no drama. The votes are going to go. In fact, the only interesting votes are going to be on the margin, whether that's Collins or Johnson and those. But all the Democrats, we all know how that's going to go. And I don't think it's really helpful to put people here till when some ungodly hour. And again,
thank you, sir.
Thank you, Senator.
I'm over it. I'm voting no. Just let me go home to my beach vacation. That's how I feel this week, except I'm having fun with you guys, but I am excited for a little time in the sun. I feel you, John. I feel you. That has been our sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We sure do appreciate it. We also would appreciate it if you become a paid subscriber to the show. It's how we continue to do this awesome, awesome, awesome show. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and then you just click on the banner. It says support the show for $5. So we make it super easy. That's it. I'll see you back here. We have a full week of shows, by the way. We're not leaving early for the holiday or anything. So we will have shows through Thursday and a regular episode of Sundays with Subscribers on Sunday as well. So we'll see you back here tomorrow at noon.